Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? Ew, seriously. They squeeze the grease out of the wool and process it with chemicals, and then you eat it. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I got rid of products I didn't want anywhere near my body. I found that many multivitamins contain high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and even lacked some of the nutrients we actually needed. So what did I do? At 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. Ritual's products are made traceable, meaning we share the science and sourcing for every single ingredient. For example, our vegan vitamin D3 comes from sustainably harvested lichen in Nottingham, England, not sheep. We trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. See for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness, and we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. I want to talk to you about the Bose S1, which is an amazing speaker for acoustic guitars that I've been playing lately. The S1 has two separate channels. It has one for your guitar and then another one for a microphone. And then there's a third channel you can use for a looper or for backing tracks that you could access by Bluetooth or through a 1/8 inch plug. And the S1s are also very easy to carry. It's got an easy to grab top handle and absolutely anyone can tote it around. And it's also rechargeable for up to 11 hours. The S1 was specifically designed to optimize the sound of your acoustic guitar on acoustic guitar gigs. The guitar and mic channels each have separate tone, volume, and reverb controls, and there's also a proprietary tone match switch, which restores and optimizes the natural sound of your acoustic guitar, which, as you know, is typically the biggest problem with acoustic amps. Now, I tested the S1 myself, and the tone, volume, and reverb controls sound great, and they're very responsive. You can position the S1 in four different ways. You can tilt it back so you broadcast out to an audience, or you could put it horizontally, vertically, or on a stand. And the cool thing is the S1 has a Bose accelerometer, so it automatically adjusts the EQ and optimizes the sound for whichever one of these four positions you're using. The S1 also happens to be the best Bluetooth speaker that Bose makes, which is pretty compelling since Bose is known for the quality of their Bluetooth speakers. So effectively, you have an acoustic guitar amp, a PA, and a killer Bluetooth speaker all in one. And the bottom line is this. If you're an acoustic guitar player, there's absolutely nothing out there that sounds this good and this big that's also easy to carry and battery powered. As far as the Bluetooth speaker goes, I've used it many times here at home for family barbecues, and the sound is so good, my kids wind up arguing over who gets to play the music they want. You know, it's literally like having a full stereo system out on your patio. You can use the S1 for DJing, tailgating, or whatever you want. Before this, you'd have to spend a bunch of money on loads of different speakers and pedals to get the same thing the S1 does on its own. On top of that, it looks great, just like all Bose devices do. And besides whatever money back guarantee you get from wherever you buy the S1, Bose also warranties the S1 for 2 years for any kind of defects in materials or performance. For more information and to find out where to get your own S1, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/S1. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/S1. Get the S1. It's outstanding. Did you know if your guitar, bass, pedals, or any of your music gear is damaged, broken, or stolen outside your home, your homeowner's insurance policy will not provide coverage for any of it. That's right. Homeowner's insurance only pays if something happens inside your home and if the items are not used for business purposes. But Music Pro Insurance insures all your music gear, no matter where it is, anywhere in the world, even when you check it in as baggage on an airline. Here, let me give you some actual examples of coverage they've provided. You're in a car accident and your equipment is damaged, boom, you're covered. Your kid pours apple juice into your amplifier, covered. Someone accidentally spills beer all over your pedal board at a gig, covered. In fact, any kind of theft or accidental damage is covered, even water damage from hurricane and breakage from earthquakes. But here's what makes Music Pro really different. They're not going to argue with you over the value of your instrument or make you run around looking for receipts when it comes to paying your claim. They know exactly why your vintage instrument is worth 10 times more than a new one. Plus, all claims are typically paid and fully settled in 24 to 48 hours. So if your equipment is not insured properly, go to EveryoneLovesGuitar.com/Music Pro. Hit standard and then enter your information and get a free gear protection estimate. Don't be that musician who ignores this and then next month when something happens, you're wondering why you didn't take 10 minutes to do this properly. Make sure you go to EveryoneLovesGuitar.com/Music Pro, enter your information and get a free gear protection estimate. This way, when something happens, you won't lose a minute of sleep because you took care of this already. Are you looking to buy or sell a home in the Tampa Bay area without having to deal with pushy realtors? Then make sure you connect with West Florida Real Estate. West Florida Real Estate has helped over 300 homeowners and investors buy and sell their properties over the last 5 years. Their service is outstanding, just like back in the days when there was actually service in the service business, and you'll never have to deal with any kind of sales junk when you're working with them. For more information, email Ann with an E at westfloridarealestate.com. That's ANNE at westfloridarealestate.com. If you're enjoying this show and you'd like to support it, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. And for information on advertising, visit everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's the perfect face, man. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. Man, I've got just a really talented guitarist, musician, and a super funny, very cool guy with Boz Boer today, and known mostly through his work with Morrissey, but he's a very good, very accomplished solo artist. Couple of quick announcements. First is Kevin Armstrong. Thanks for the connection and hookup. Second is make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe and subscribe for the audio and video. All right, let's talk about Boz. English guitarist and producer, as I said, most recently known for his work as co-writer, guitarist, and musical director with Morrissey. They've done 10 albums since 1992 through this year's California Sun. What's that?
Ten,
yeah.
Wow.
I know. Does it feel like 100 or does it feel like 3?
It feels more like 3. But there's a new one as well coming out called I'm Not a Dog on a Chain.
That's a great title. All your stuff is that you're involved with is very creative, man.
It'll be out in March.
In March. He's a solo artist. He's got 5 albums of his own. He's founder of the Polecats. They've released 11 records and Boz and the Bozman, as well as an active producer and engineer. He's also been a sideman with Adam Ant, David Bowie, Joan Armatrading. I had Joan on my show. She's quite lovely, man. Very, very nice woman.
I haven't seen her for a long time, but I've got some good memories.
And man, she's had some great guitar players.
I didn't play guitar for her, though. I played Penny Whistle. And one of those Jaws harp things.
Yeah. That's so funny. She had Chris Spedding. I'm sure you know Chris.
Yeah. I don't know him personally. Well, I've seen him a couple of times.
Yeah, he was on her records. He's also done work with Jules Holland, Ronnie Dawson, the Deltas, John's Children, the Blueberry Hellbellies, Christy McCall and Edwin Collins, and besides guitar, Boz also plays clarinet, saxophone, bass, drums, and piano, and as we just found out, Jew's harp. He also toured Japan with his wife's all-girl rockabilly band, the Shillelagh Sisters, and the Shillelagh Sisters are reuniting for an American gig coming up in April called Viva Las Vegas. It's a rockabilly festival, so Boz is going to be there as well playing. So if you want to check that out, we'll talk about that at the end as well. Boz has his own record label called NV Records. He also has a successful record shop in Camden Lock. It's called, I have it right here, I'm sorry, Vinyl Boutique. And he also runs House of Boz Recording Studio in England and Serra Vista Studio in Portugal, where he does a lot of production work. This is the 10 minutes he's got free he's given me. I don't know if that
decision... I should have asked you to fill in my visa application yesterday. You know more about me than I knew myself.
I know, man. Just have him call me. His last solo record called Age of Boom from 2016 is awesome, man. I would really encourage you to listen to it. High energy, very groovy, and it's tons of fun, man. It's really energetic. It's gotten me through several gym workouts. So, Boz, thank you so much for your time, and I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the show.
I'm glad we eventually managed to. I was worried that you were thinking I was just trying to, but I had a lot on. So.
No, man, you had full on. Are you kidding me? No, I really appreciate it. Not at all. Not for a minute.
Good.
Polecats. Rock, and a lot of your stuff is rockabilly. Is rockabilly popular in England? And also, when did you get turned on to that kind of music, that genre?
Well, when we were kids, we'd start listening to rock and roll, things like Chuck Berry and Eddie Cochran. And one of our gang, Chris's brothers, were Teddy Boys, and they were listening to more obscure rock and roll and what we later knew to be called rockabilly. Hmm. And a band called Crazy Cabin and the Rhythm Rockers. The singer died, I think, 2 days ago, sadly. Oh. But that was Crazy Cabin and the Rhythm Rockers were our sort of that first thing that, you know, the band that we went and saw the most. I think the first Polecat gig, there was probably 8 Crazy Cabin songs in the set. You know?
That's cool.
And so we slowly got, that was more Teddy Boy rock and roll.
But explain what that means, Teddy Boy, for most of the people that are listening to this or Americans.
Teddy Boy, it's more heavier, and there weren't any rockabillies. It was all that there was in the early 70s. And then towards the late 70s, the rockabilly look with the flat top hair and the checkered shirts and jeans and donkey jackets became the norm. And bands like, well, singers like Matt Curtis and Charlie Feathers started coming over to England to play. And it became its own genre of rockabilly rather than be Teddy Boy. And the Teddy Boys were older.
Right. What did you like about this, you personally? Like, what turned you on about that music?
Everything. The slap bass. A lot of it had proper melodies as well, which kind of missing a little bit. My progression from glam rock and then into punk and rockabilly for me were going side by side. We would go to punk gigs and rockabilly gigs. And we started playing music and we played both punk and rockabilly, but we kind of the rockabilly took over more and just became rockabilly all the time.
Yeah, very cool.
And we started playing versions of glam songs like David Bowie's songs of the T-Rex. And we kind of started a whole crossover. And then the Stray Cats came over and the rest is history.
Oh, okay. Very cool, man. How did you first get started in the music business and like maybe what was your first break or opportunity, big opportunity or good opportunity?
Well, Polecats, I was trying to get a gig at a place called the Royalty in Southgate, North London. That was the rock and roll, rockabilly main on Thursday night every week. And I kept giving the DJ cassettes rehearsals and he kept saying it's not good enough. So in the end we went to a studio and recorded 4 of our own songs, and the next time I saw him was at the Lyceum at a Ray Campion Bo Diddley gig, and he came running up. He said, I'm going to form a record company and I'm going to put your record out. I think it's brilliant.
What was different what was different about that last set of songs you gave him?
Oh, it was recorded in a studio.
Okay.
It was actually some guy's garage down the road in North London that cost us about $20 to record. But it was properly recorded with microphones. It wasn't just one or cassette player shoved in the room.
Okay.
It was properly recorded and properly mixed. So that was it. So we formed a company and that was our first record. I was still at school. I was about 17. I was 17 years old, 16 or 17. And that was the start of it all, really.
first record you did with Morrissey, it was 1992, was Your Arsenal. Mick Ronson produced that record, and he also played on it. Was that the first time you worked with Mick, and what was that experience like?
Well, it was the only time we worked with Mick, because he died shortly after.
Yeah.
He came along to a rehearsal we were doing, and he was I thought he was fantastic, Mick. He was a great man, great way about him, great way of getting playing out of you, getting you to play well, and good ideas for parts, and a great sound. He'd just stand in front of the amplifier and dial in the sound that he could hear in his head. It was a great time.
In your personal music, you do something I really think is cool and I enjoy. You use a lot of sound clips, and they're engaging, and they always seem to be played placed in the right place. And you do this with Morrissey, but I think a little more so, it seems like, in your solo work. Where did that idea first come from? And where do you find these clips? And are you always looking for little snippets if you hear something that, that would be good to put in a song?
I don't know. I'm not really. I know we do it quite a lot with Morrissey, but they're his ideas, and he has. I don't know where they come from, but I can source the original audio and clean it up and use it. I suppose I don't really know where it comes from. I've always been a fan of mixing different types of music, and spoken words. It's very unusual when you hear it with music, especially if it's a dramatic piece or just a sound effect. I've never really thought about it, really. I've just done it.
You know where you hear that a lot is in... there's a lot of bands from Northern Europe, like Netherlands, Sweden, stoner rock bands, and they do that stuff all the time. And it's really prolific with them. And I've never heard it in like your style of music. It just sounded so cool.
I'm trying to think, maybe one of the first times I did it was, there was a band I used to work with called the Wigsaw Spliffs, which was a rockabilly band in the 80s. And they did an instrumental, which they wanted to be like about baseball.
About baseball?
About baseball, yeah.
Interesting.
Strike one, and I sampled strike one, and I had that going through strike two, strike three, and then I downloaded some baseball commentary. And Herzog, the manager, hasn't scored all season, so what else is new? And I put that on. It was very. But there was a band that I used to listen. One of my favorite bands was a band called Tupelo Chainsets from California in the early '80s, and they would mimic everything, and taught me that there were no rules.
Yeah. You can, I get that vibe in your music that is, there's no rules. You're just doing what feels good, man. And it feels good. It really does.
Cheers.
I'm going to mention some artists you work with. If you could talk about how you got the gig or how you connected with them, and maybe a cool or interesting story about working with them. Let's just start with Morrissey.
I met Morrissey through Cole Smith, through Chess Smash and Madness. We went on holiday together. And we hit it off, and we would meet up various times. He phoned me. I was a studio engineer at Chrysalis Music, recording demos with songwriters. And he said, would you like to go for lunch? I said, yeah, sure. And he said, oh, it's with Clive Lang, the producer, and me and Morrissey. And I said, yeah, sure. So that's how we got introduced. And it just went on from there, gradually more and more. And I did a recording session, and then... And then we did the rehearsals and went on tour.
It's amazing. Funny how that happens, isn't it? Like, you're not the dots connect in strange ways, man.
I was looking for a new job. I was doing too much at Chrysalis. I was working, doing the work of two people, and I was looking for something else. And I came along, and it's perfect.
Our kids were friends.
Adam Ant.
I met Adam through Marco, the other kid. Oh, you know Marco?
Yeah, yeah.
Marco had been working with me at Chrysalis, doing all the guitars for a band called Max. the singer was Kevin Mooney, who was a member of Adam and the Ants, who was the bass player. And I liked Marco, and I liked his style of playing, and I liked his guitars. And then he phoned me up in the early 90s and said, could I go around to have a chat? When I got round there, Dave Ruffy was there and Adam. And they were talking about going on tour to promote an album called Persuasion, which never came out in the end. And would I be a second guitarist on the tour? So I did that. It was great. And then we did the record called Wonderful.
That's David Ruffy was from
The Ruts.
Yeah, The Ruts. I had I'm having to talk about a senior moment. I had Segs,
yeah,
and Lee on the show. Both of those guys, yes. great. Man, it's a small world, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all connected.
It really is. Bowie, how'd you connect with Bowie?
Well, when we were in Los Angeles, we did a gig at the LA Forum down in Inglewood. And I'm not quite sure how it came about, but I think we were trying to think of someone to maybe get on as a special guest. And I'd been out all day and I came back and it had all been arranged during the day. And I got to the show. Someone thrust a guitar in my hand and said, you're going to do Cosmic Dancer and you've got to go now into the dressing room and run through it with Morrissey and Bowie. And we did it. At the end of the show, we came on for the encore, started playing. It's only acoustic guitar. Morrissey started singing the song. And then the second verse, Bowie started singing an octave lower, but he had a really long lead and he was off the stage.
Oh.
So he started singing it an octave lower and then he gradually, slowly walked onto the stage. And people looked at it thinking, hang on a minute. No.
Well, you didn't know it was Tim?
No.
Jules Holland.
He had a TV show called The Tube. And
was that before like his current TV
yeah,
show?
This yeah, this is in the early 80s. He was a producer. He was a presenter. And my wife's band were booked to play on it.
Oh.
The Shipley Sisters. So we drove all the way up to Newcastle and we played, I think, three songs. I think that was on YouTube. We did a version of Booze Made for Walking. And afterwards he came and had a chat and he said, well, I'd like to play in. Would you fancy coming around and play some of that stuff for me in my home studio? So I don't see him from year to year, but we've had a friendship since then, so we always touch base.
That's so cool. I used to watch his show quite often here. I don't know if it's on as much anymore. I don't maybe watch as much TV, but what a great show.
Yeah, I don't know if it used to be syndicated in America. I don't know if it still is.
I don't know. I guess, like I said, I used to see it quite frequently, and I also got rid of cable. I got some other stuff here because it was like...
I don't have any... My TV in the bedroom is just Netflix. And
yeah.
There's nothing that's... it doesn't run normal TV.
Yeah, same with us, man. It was like $200 a month or something like that for nothing. A bunch of crap, man.
I have normal TV here in the sitting room.
Right.
But we don't watch a lot. I just haven't got time.
I know. I'm the same. You have a great work ethic. You know, it's clear to me that you like being busy. And I was curious... I'm not putting you on the spot. I know you don't like talking about yourself, but you really do have a great work ethic, man. And I respect that. And that tells you a lot about a person.
Yeah. I'm sitting a little bit behind at the moment. There's things I need to, I need to take care of a bit of business. I need to do a bit of, and it's annoying me that I haven't done it. But
that's everybody. Everybody with a good work ethic is always like that, thinking I got shit to do and not. But where does that come from? Like, where does that you're super driven, man? Where do you think that comes from?
Probably my wife.
No, seriously, where does that come from? Because it sounds like you're always like that.
Well, I had a paper around for 7 years. I used to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and go and deliver papers. Now I bought my first guitar.
Yeah.
Dad was a hard worker. Was out of the house at 10 to 8 every morning.
What'd he
do? I don't
do?
Really feel that. I don't feel as I work that much. I feel as though I'm lazy sometimes. I put things off is what I do.
We never have time off.
And then,
never have a day off.
I feel as though I'm working harder than I ever worked before with the shop and the studio and touring and all the other stuff. But I'm sure there'll become a time when I can't do it, so I should just do it while I can.
Make hay while the sun's shining?
Exactly, sir.
Tell me the top three experiences you've had musically. You changed wines from white to red. Is that a bad sign or a good sign?
Say that again. I did what? I changed the wine. You notice I changed the wine.
Rose,
I had rose first. Let's run out.
I'm cooking, so I'm not the rose.
So she's cooking, yeah. She's music experiences. Playing with Ronnie Dawson was amazing.
What's that?
He cut there's a singer from the 50s called Ronnie Dawson.
Right.
And he was the first person that reached inside me and pulled playing out that I didn't really know was in there. Found myself playing. I don't know where it came from. He would bring this playing from within you, which I think is a great skill. Wish I could do it. So the shows I did, and I did some of my wife on bass. They were always a great thing to behold.
Is that how you guys met?
Sorry?
Is that how you and your wife met?
Oh, no. We met sometime in the...
40 years ago.
Yeah, 40 years ago. We worked out... I went to see Chuck Berry in 1977, and she was at the same gig, but we didn't know each other then.
That's cool.
We met in about 1980 or 1981.
Look at you two.
4 years ago.
It's funny, man. You guys are like finish each other's sentences. It's nice. You know, it's cute. It's funny though. All right, top three: Ronnie Dawson.
Well, and Morrissey. I mean, I've been working with him for 29 years, and it's quite a musical experience.
Hell yeah!
And I've done so many great things. There's not really any. There's not really any rules. And it's a case of it's the most creative that I can be when I work with Morrissey. But musically, the most pleasing, it's the most. It's really reaching inside and finding things from anywhere. Really, it's as I say again, there's no rules.
Yeah.
Being friends with and playing with Kirsty MacColl was a lovely time. And Adam Ann, was a lovely experience. I haven't played him for a long time, but I go and see him quite a lot when he's playing.
Yeah.
And he's gone from strength to strength. It's fantastic.
Even like you talk about your work ethic with Morrissey, you're not just a guitar player, you're the MD, and I'm sure, I don't know you well, but I have a good feeling for you, and I know you're like managing everything properly, and you got a big to-do list and tick, tick, tick.
I was going to say, that's one of the things I've got to we have some shows booked up in Leeds, Cologne in Germany, Paris, France, and London coming up in March, and I've got to do some work on the songs.
Are you guys coming over here this year?
We're booked in to do
sure, yeah.
That festival in Los Angeles on May the 2nd. There's a big festival, Bauhaus are playing.
Oh, wow.
Public Image. Is it called Cruel World?
What's it called?
Cruel World.
Cruel World?
Cruel World. Yeah, both of us have got Google on the go.
That's amazing. Everyone's on it.
Cruel World. LA, May 2nd.
Crew World Festival in LA.
I've just got coffee places in San Diego. Crew World Festival in Carson. Lineup and ticket info. One day festival.
Everyone seems to be
Bauhaus, alive. Blondie, Devo, Echo and the Bunnymen, Gary Newman,
wow.
Mark Arnold, Morrissey, Public Image, The English Beat, Psychedelic Furs, Violent Femmes. That's a pretty
meet yours.
Yeah.
That's a pretty mad
yeah.
That's a pretty mad.
That's gonna be a full day, man.
One day. There's yeah. going to be 10 stages that are a mile apart each one. I don't know. I mean, I've got no idea. It's a pretty mad lineup.
Buzz, tell me if you're kind enough or comfortable enough, tell me one or two mistakes that you made, like tuition you paid early on in your career and maybe the lessons you learned from the mistakes.
If I've ever played anything that I don't believe in musically, and I've probably done that a couple of times when I was younger, it's just a waste of time.
Just to get the gig, you mean?
If you don't feel it, it's not successful. It's not going to be. It's just don't waste your time doing stuff that you don't believe in, and play with as many people as possible, and you learn from them as you're developing. Play with so many people, so you find bits from everyone that's good. I'd say that was a tip that you could learn from not wasting your time.
Yeah, that's great advice, man. If you had to go back and give young Boz advice, assuming you'd have listened, what advice would you have told yourself?
Hold tight. It's a bumpy ride. You get to enjoy it.
Hold tight. It's a bumpy road. That's great, man.
Yeah. There's an old picture of me in a magazine called The Face, and it was a fashion music magazine. And they used polecats as models for this company called Lloyd. What was this stuff called? Lloyd. All those suits from the King's Road. But we used to wear their clothes all the time. And so we did a photo session. I did it at my mum's house, and I upstairs, I got a picture of my mum and dad from their wedding. And I put that on a fireplace. And the picture was taken with me looking in the mirror. And I posted it on Facebook a year or so ago. And someone got a picture of me and put my face now in the mirror. So there was me as the young boss.
That's
me
funny.
As the old boss in the mirror. And someone said, What would he say to him?
That's funny, man. It's a bumpy, hold tight. It's a bumpy road.
Yeah.
Man, let's talk about gear for a few minutes. What is your go-to guitar right now? Has that changed over time? And what other few guitars would round out your top three or four?
My favorite guitar is my 1963 Telecaster.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't expect that.
I've had it for about 25 years, maybe a bit more. And it just has that mojo. It has whatever went into it at that particular, everything that went into it was magic, I think. I've got a Martin D45 acoustic that doesn't get played much, but I have to put new strings on it and get some oil for the neck, and then it comes to life and it responds when it's taken care of. I love that guitar. I've got a few guitars that I've reused the White Falcon the most, but mainly for rockabilly for the polecats. That's the one, that White Falcon that's on there. I've got several saxes and clarinets. They're kind of perfunctory, really. They're just, I'd like to have a really good saxophone.
What do you play? Alto, tenor, or baritone? What do you play?
Mainly tenor.
Yeah.
I love baritone, and I didn't buy one. And I know the guy who bought it, so I know where it is if I need to borrow it. I have a soprano, and I have an alto. I had to have an alto when I played with Edwin Collins.
Interesting.
There's about four or five songs with alto on. And I said, I'll just play them on the tenor. They went, well, no.
He wanted you to play it on the alto.
I can rip it up. Rip it up and start again. There's a big sax solo at the end of it. So I just bought an alto. I never played one before, but I just bought an alto sax, and that was me. So it's not very good. So I'm having all those worked on at the moment. I'm having them all serviced.
Where'd you get your telly?
Rocket. It's called Rocket, the company that did all those suits.
No, it's not. Johnson's. Johnson's was the company that did the clothing in the Kingside. Whenever in the podcast, whenever we had a photo session, they just said, "Yeah, just come down and borrow." We just borrowed the stuff off the racks.
From the King's Road.
We'd take it back down, and if we wanted it, we could buy it at a cheaper price, or we could just give it back. So we never had to buy any clothes in the 80s.
God, that's cool.
Fender Telecaster. Yeah, it came from a guy who worked on the crew. And he said, "I've got this guitar for sale. Do you want to buy it?" And I played it, and I liked it. And it's probably the guitar I've played most in the last 30 years, I'd say.
I never would have expected you to say that.
Got an old 6120 that's painted white, which I had before I started with Morrissey. And I've worn it out. I'd love to have some work done on it so I can play it again, because it was great.
Are you a Gretsch artist?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine. God, they'd be foolish not having you as an artist.
I've got the first Gretsch custom guitar ever made.
Do you?
Yeah, it's a pink penguin. It's a bit of a silly story behind it, but it was the first guitar that they made for an artist where they didn't make 25 of them.
They just made the one custom.
He made one, and he went, "That's it, I'm not making any more." So it became, by default, it became the first custom Gretsch.
Yeah,
it's a pink penguin, and they made white penguins, and I said, "I like a pink penguin with gold hardware," and I like it.
That's cool. Having the only one too, that's really cool.
And then something happened to it; it fell over, and the neck came off. We went to there's a guy in London fix it for me, but Gretsch sent me. To apologize, I mean, they didn't have anything to apologize for, but they sent me a pink amplifier that was matching, and it was the only one. They said, "We made you one in pink to match your guitar."
So you got the set now, man.
I love the people at Gretsch. They're very nice to me.
Yeah, man. What's the best guitar and best amp you've ever owned or played?
Well, I've got a lot of different guitars. They all have their own merits, I think. Different guitars for different sounds and different styles. I love old guitars. I've got a really old Gibson ES-295, the gold top.
Yeah.
With the white scratch plate.
Is that the one with the little flowers in it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It has that rose design on the... That's really nice. I mean, it's quite a simple guitar, but I love old guitars.
It's a cool looking guitar.
When you open the things up, I've got an 80s 335 that I like. I used to have an old 60s one that I didn't like so much. I have some guitars. I'm trying to envisage the rack as I go through. I've got a picture somewhere of the sides of all the guitars.
Sure.
I mean, I don't really play Les Pauls. I've got a lovely old top, and I've got a purple one from the 70s. They're a bit heavy for me, though.
Yeah.
I prefer semi-acoustics or things with Bigsby's on.
Yep, totally get it.
I've got a James Trussart telly. I've got a Faino guitar that's very nice. It's very simple, like a junior. I've got a junior, 59 junior. That I'm trying to get fretted at the moment, but Andy won't call me back. Andy, call me back on my refret.
I think he did.
Oh, he did. Sorry, I take that back. He phoned. Sorry, Andy. You're a good man. Best man in London for refretting. I'm trying to think what else is up there. When I do podcasts, I normally we use that White Falcon. That's the best sound I've found for the podcasts. With Morrissey, it's always different. It's always the sound comes from the guitar. So I don't really usually change settings much on an amplifier.
What do you play through amp-wise?
Using Blackstar with Morrissey for quite a few years now. I was using Bassmans. I had some Bassmans from Fender. I've also had some stuff from Lainey. I've just bought myself an old Fender Twin Reverb, and it's JBL's in it. But I remember having one before. I'm too old now to lift it.
Yeah, man.
A twin in a flight case with JBLs from the 70s. It's just, why did they make them? It's just, they're unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's a good sound. So I've revisited it. It's probably about 20 years since I had one. I would like to have a nice Vox AC30 or a Vox head, and I don't have one.
Or, you mean an old one?
Or a new one of those top of the range, everything's point to point. Soldering and
hand wired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to have one of those. I've got a red amp that was made by an independent amp maker in Rome. And when we did the record before California Sun, he lent it to me in the studio and I ended up buying it. I think if you did a search for red amp, it's a fantastic amplifier. It has so many different, varieties of sound. Red amp was Bora. Did it come up? Yep. Oh, it's profile. Well, iPlug. No, I can't see it. It's a great amp. I shipped it over to Portugal.
On your studio?
Sorry?
In your studio?
The amp I use most in there is just an old Vibrachamp Silverface from the 70s. It's got one sound on it, but it seems to be one of my go-to. Just turn it up, shove a mic in front of it, and it seems to be a sound that I like.
You have two studios, right? You have one in England and one in Portugal?
The one in England isn't here anymore.
Oh, okay.
They sold the building, and I looked for a new premise for a long time. I tend to use my publisher as a studio, and there's a studio close to me here that a friend of mine runs. I use that on Sunday. I would like to have a setup somewhere, but it's not happened in the last few years.
We have a fabulous place.
I can set things up here, needs be. I'll have some work to do later that I'll do here, just setting everything up. I've got a keyboard and I've got everything that I need to be able to work.
Yeah.
But in Portugal, I just open up the door, turn it on, press a button, everything's there, and it's all on. All my guitars there, amplifiers, percussion, two drum kits. It's up a mountain.
What made you pick Portugal? What prompted you to work in?
I was going to buy a house in Ireland, and it all fell through and went horribly wrong. And the guy that was our tour manager lived in Portugal, and he said, why don't you come and have a look here? It's cheap. Yeah, it's good. People are nice.
In the mountains.
So we went and looked, and we came back with a new house.
Yeah. I've been there. It is beautiful up in those mountains, man. It's a very pretty place. Food is delicious there, man. Holy shit. I'm not even a foodie, but it was really good food.
I'm foodie now because of Portugal.
Tell me your top three, just for now, like your knee-jerk reaction, top three Desert Island CDs.
CDs.
I hate CDs. Yeah, or you know what I mean. Top three albums. You know what I mean.
Okay. So, Electric Warrior by T-Rex. This is my glam rock passion, T-Rex. T-Rex like that, spelt like that.
There you go.
Because there's always about 10. I'll just ramble through 10.
Okay, go ahead.
Ooh La La by The Faces. School's Out, Alice Cooper. Sticky Fingers by The Rolling Stones. Mm-hmm. The Scream by Susie and the Banshees. Did I already say that?
No. Nope.
I can't remember. How many is that? Five, six?
Like five, I think. Five or six.
I've got lost now. So never mind The Bollocks by The Sex Pistols. I've probably got them written down somewhere.
Is it hard? You must listen to new music all the time owning a record store. You probably get turned on to so much new stuff.
I don't listen to much new stuff. I can't find as much new stuff that I get enthused about.
Yeah, I get that.
I find myself in the record store playing something like Ooh La La by the Faces.
Right.
That's the go-to record when I can't think of anything else to play.
Is Ooh La La by the Faces. There's some great, man, Rod sounded, everything sounded good on that record, man.
Yeah, it sounds like it was recorded in a weekend. Yeah. It's very rough. The drum beat changes halfway through a couple of the songs. But Boston Boys, Silicon Grown, Cindy Incidentally. And the main track, Ooh La La, which is wasn't sung by Rod, was sung by Ronnie Wood, not even Ronnie.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Of new bands, there's not really a lot that I've heard that I like. I quite like the Fontaines DC. They've just had a new record, and they're still growing. They're playing Brixton, I think, next month. So they're crowd based. They've got up to a gig that's 5,000 people. So they're doing pretty well in England.
Yeah,
they're from Dublin, from Ireland. I quite like them. They're a bit like a modern version of The Fall. You know, Marky Smith's Fall.
Yeah.
I quite like them, and I quite like. There's not a lot really that I hear of new music. I don't hear a lot of music, new music. I buy old records.
Right, right. I get that. I get turned on to new music because of the show, because I meet somebody that's coming on the show and I want to check out their music. So I'll hear, like your last record. It was like I wouldn't have probably got turned on to that if I didn't have you coming on, and I'm very glad I did. What's the name of that T-Rex record that you like? Because I want to go listen to that.
Electric Warrior.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. I've got that. I've listened to that many times. Classic record, man.
I'll tell you the track listing.
Hey, tell me the... now the questions get tough. Best decision you ever made?
Well, we've got to get married.
I was going to say, you're under pressure now, man. You're in the room with your wife.
Live with my beloved and have our wonderful family.
Yeah, man, 40 years sounds like it was a good decision. This is a tough question, man. What do you like most about yourself?
Record collection.
That doesn't count, man.
I don't know. I'm generous and I'm honest, I think, really.
That's great.
No bullshit.
You know what, man? I knew that about you. I don't know how, but that's why when you said, I didn't want you to think, I knew you were very straightforward to me anyway. I never thought I thought you'd be the kind of guy if you could, you wouldn't.
I don't like to please people. I don't like people not to like me.
Yeah.
And whenever that does happen, I mean, you can't be friends with everyone in the entire world.
No.
There must be someone with a completely opposite idea to what you have. I'd like to be friends with everyone, but doesn't always happen that way.
Yeah, that's true. For sure, man. Best childhood memory?
Is that 335? Does it say custom underneath the...
No, it says... it says custom made, but it's not a vintage. What happened was... Here's a story of that. It's a really good story. I was in Nashville, and I wanted to buy a 335. And I saw an ad on Craigslist. And the thing is, I knew that was, I was talking to some guys and they said, be careful because that Bigsby is going to be aftermarket. So in my head, I imagined some idiot like myself out in his garage drilling the Bigsby. And I said, man, I probably shouldn't mess with that. But I was hanging out with a guy called John Prestia, who is, someone's guitar tech. I'm lost my memory. Big country star guitar. He's been his guitar tech.
We should just forget everyone in the world. We should do a show where we just go, what was his name? you know him. You just mentioned him. You are one of his. No, you play guitar one of his records. What was his name?
I know. It's Tim McGraw. He's Tim McGraw's guitar tech for like 25 years. So he goes, Craig, let me call him up for you. Because, he's a guitar tech. He's like MacGyver of guitars. And it turns out the guy who owned it bought it. He's a Gibson employee, and he put the, it was aftermarket, but they put the Bigsby in at Gibson. And so it looks like a vintage because it has that custom made thing there where they put it in, but it's not, it's like it's like a 2013. It's my number one. It's beautiful, man. I love that guitar. It sounds,
I got a 54 gold top reissue from Gibson, and I throw away. I said, well, I'll have one of those.
Yeah.
I said, can you just bang a Bigsby on it for me? And they said, yeah, sure. And then a year later, I thought they'd completely forgotten about me. And they said, oh, your guitar's ready.
Took a year to put a Bigsby on. That's service.
And when I got it, it was a Gibson custom order.
Oh.
So it didn't go to a little back room and someone put a Bigsby on it. They made a brand new custom order for me.
Wow.
With the Bigsby.
That's so great. Pretty much. Yeah.
I've never taken the tags off of it.
Still wow.
In the box.
Yeah.
I've used it.
Who's MacGyver?
Oh, MacGyver is a TV show they used to have on here, I think, like maybe in the 90s. And he was one of these guys like, you know, he's stuck in the forest or somewhere in a, you know, locked in a cave with some people he's got to rescue. But he's got a little thing of dental floss, a flashlight, and a tampon in a box. And he somehow uses that to explode the door. And, it, you know, he's one of those guys. He can make anything at, you know, he's just like, you know. So this guy was like MacGyver of guitars. You know, he could do anything with it. best childhood memory. You're not getting out of it.
Best childhood memory.
Where'd you grow up? Did you grow up in
London? North London.
Yeah.
Playing guitar at school, going on holiday in Italy and Denmark and places like that, singing in a choir. So I was growing up and then discovering music and going out to punk gigs when I was about 15.
Did you know those guys from the Ruts when you were younger?
No. I met Dave that day when I went round to Marco's house. I met Dave, and then I saw Dave in the Mondrian Hotel in Los Angeles, and he was chatting to a guy, and I said, sorry, Dave. I said, excuse me. I said, I met you a couple of weeks ago at Marco's house with Adam. And he went, oh, yeah. He said, oh, this is Steve Lillywhite.
The producer.
And I said, oh, you produced one of my favorite records of all time, which is The Scream by Susie and the Banshees. And Steve Lillywhite ended up producing Vauxhall and I.
Oh. And
Southport. So he ended up being a producer with us. And he was married to Kirsten McColl, who was playing at that time in LA. And that's why Dave was there, because he was playing with Kirsty. And Kirsty became a great friend of ours.
That's why, like I said, every time the music world is really small, man. And everybody knows. And all that was going on in America. That's what's really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. In the Mondrian Hotel bar. In probably 93 something. Yeah, great times.
Who's had the biggest influence on you musically?
Mark Bolan, I'd have to say. It was why I wanted to pick up a guitar. I loved music. A lot of those rockabilly guitarists, Cliff Gallup from Gene Vincent, there's Paul, Scotty Moore, who played with Elvis Presley.
Sure.
So a lot of those rockabilly guitarists, and then not really anything. Alvin Lee from 10 Years.
Oh, what a guitar player, man!
I'm not a fast speed guitarist, but when I was growing up, and I heard and I learned some Alvin Lee things, I remember going to see him when I was still young and seeing him play. I thought he was quite incredible.
Oh, those early 10 Years Afters record, they were like a lot of psychedelic blues stuff going on there. You know, you didn't hear too much of that. The way he...
335.
Yeah, I know. 335,
yeah.
I know, but when I hear him, I want to put that thing away and never pick it up. He was so amazing. Such a good player, man.
Like a different understanding of music, like a different sort of, I think he thought about music. I mean, it's a great thing. It's a great connection with mathematics, I think, music.
Yeah.
But some of those jazz players are just kind of from another realm, I think.
Tough question. Tell me a specific experience that changed your life or changed the way you think about things. Might have the wine talking here now.
Well, I think my whole life probably changed when we had children. What did you do with all that time that you had before you had children? Yeah. What did I do with all that time? Because I don't have that time anymore. Yeah. What did I do with it before I had children? Probably just frittered it away. I mean, children, they don't really take up much of our life anymore because they've grown up and one of them's moved to Australia. But that's the major part of your life, I think. So.
Yeah.
Between the children, it's 20-odd years of, it's a major.
I had an interview with somebody yesterday. He was a blues player from actually South Africa. Great blues player, Dan Petlansky. Anyway, he said the exact same thing. And he says, you know, I remember when before I had kids, I never used to practice. And I always wondered, what did I do with my time? And now all of a sudden, he's got young kids, he's a younger guy. Now I force myself to practice, but because I've only got that 1 hour or, you know, whatever the time is. It was the same exact answer. Yeah, but you're right. It's so much time.
Definitely.
Two more questions. Toughest decision you've had to make or most difficult thing you've had to do? Boz looks horrified at this question.
Red or white wine?
Whatever floats your boat. Which is stronger? Which has a higher alcohol content?
Well, it all depends. When I had my own wine, the red wine was weaker than the white. The white was really kind of mind-blowingly strong.
Did you have your own wine? You had a vineyard or?
No, there was a place in
Austria
that said would Boz like his own wine. And they sent me this whole case of different wines. They said, we had these wines. Which one would you like? And it was a big box of different reds and blushes. And so I picked, this is the last bottle of the red.
Oh my God, Boz Bora Red. That is awesome. Oh, that's a classic, man.
It's not really sure. It's about 12%, but the white wine was 14. That's like it's like an Italian Montepulciano. It's like a nice afternoon.
There's the picture.
I've had a bottle of this already for my
awesome. Perfect. That's great, man. You got your own wine. You got your own coffee. You're like you got your fingers in everything.
We don't make any money out of it, though.
Yeah. Shh.
We drink very well. What was the question?
Toughest decision you had to make or most difficult thing you had to do?
I don't know. They things kind of take their own course, I think, with me. I can start the ball rolling and then it goes down and takes care of itself. I don't really make many decisions.
So you just kind of go with the, you know, I guess follow what the universe is telling you?
Yeah. I should start. I do too much at the moment. I've done too much for a couple of years now. But I never say no. I just, yeah, well, let me have a look. Yeah, I can work something out in April. We can go in the studio and do some recording. But I really shouldn't do as much as I do because I feel sometimes that I spread myself a bit too thinly.
Yeah.
So just don't get the attention that they should really have. Should that's the only reason, not to let anyone down, just so that things I do decide to do are really done to the best of my ability. I'm not trying to. my head thinking about, oh, well, hang on, tomorrow I've got to go and do that. Or,
you know. You're a pleaser.
Yeah. You know, I used to do a lot of stuff like that. Like I used to take on too much. And then what I realized the hard way was the main thing I was working on suffered. Because I never got to put 100% into that. So I stopped doing that. Not out of anything other than if I want my main project to work.
Yeah, let's do it. Fuck them. Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Not, you know, just out of like, sorry, man, I can't, you know, I can't. I wouldn't say fuck them.
Take that bit out.
Really? No, that's classic. Yeah. That's good stuff. No, leave it out.
I'll be able to watch it.
That's classic. Hey, you're on your third glass or fourth glass of wine. You can say whatever you want at this point. You get a pass.
Of course,
Bor. You're Boz Bor. Last question, man. Tell me the biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years and how much of that change has been deliberate and how much is just a natural part of aging.
Grumpy.
Great that the missus is in on this.
I'm becoming an old man and I'm just grumpy. I don't want to be.
I don't think you're grumpy, man. I don't believe that answer.
I am a bit grumpy. I think I'm a bit more grumpy than I have been.
Got more grumpy?
I think so, yeah.
That's all right.
I don't like being grumpy.
It's natural.
But I think so, as you get older, we're used to things being in a particular order or a particular way. And the way that you like them, that you've decided after all these years, I like to do this and then I like to do that.
Right.
And something disrupts it. It's like, oh, why can't it just be like I want it to be? I know how I like it. So, stop when they change the timing of your favorite program on TV. It's no.
Hey, life's pretty good if that's what's upsetting you, man. In the big picture, you know.
Yeah, I don't have any great problems. I don't think I have any great problems. I'm just trying to fit everything in.
Yeah.
Just trying to do everything.
Just say no. Just say no.
Tendonitis.
Doesn't exist. In my arms, I've got tendonitis in both of my arms from playing down here. And it's kind of like a constant pain, and I should not play. How can I not play?
You can't not play. No. I think everybody's got that.
Keep hitting this elbow as well. Windows and doors. And
that's what happens, man. When you got a weak spot, it always it always.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah.
Hey, let me tell people, first of all, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. I know you got a lot going on, so thanks for making time for this. Let me tell people some stuff you got going on and where they could check out. First of all, it's Boz Bor, BozBoorer. Check out at a minute. He's got all of his records on all the streaming services, but listen to his last record, Age of Boom. It's really great. I mean, it's a freaking fun, killer record. Killer licks and music on there. Great guitar stuff. He has a new, he's going to be, him and his wife, the Shillelagh Sisters and the Polecats are going to be at Viva Las Vegas Rockabilly Festival. It's takes place over the 9th or the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th in Las Vegas, obviously. So get tickets to see that. He's got, okay, let me go out. A new record. Hold up your record, man. Let's do some promotion. Boz Bor's All Stars. It's a double 45. And look at that. It's a gatefold double 45, just like old school. Very cool. And it was put out on a record company out of Spain called Sleazy Records. They do a lot of rockabilly stuff, Sleazy. And you can get the record at Sleazy. Go to Sleazy Records website. Also, you can get the record if you're in England. Get it at Vinyl Boutique, which is Boz's record store down in Camden. And you can also get it on Facebook, the Vinyl Boutique Facebook store. If you are in, this guy's international, man. If you're in San Diego, go to the Heartbreak Cafe and get yourself some Boz Bor coffee. And what else you got? Age of Boom.
Morrissey shows coming up.
What's that? Yeah, the Marcy show's coming up this year around Europe and one in America. When does the new record come out? What is it called again?
It's called I'm Not a Dog on a Chain.
I'm Not a Dog on a Chain.
I think it's coming out very early March.
Fantastic. I'm Not a Dog on a Chain. It's out in early March. And let's see what else here. I think that's it. I think it's time to put the hearse in reverse, man.
The hearse in reverse. I want to live again.
Yeah, man. What a great song. That song is so good. I honestly listened to it about 10 times in a row. It got me through my entire workout on one song.
I did. A friend of mine, Saucer Man, asked me to – I was going to mix a record for him. And he gave me his stuff, and that song was one of the songs. And I said – and I mixed it. And I said, what are you going to do with it? He goes, oh, I don't know, man. Band isn't playing anymore. I'm not going to put it out. I said, can I use that backing track and put my own vocal on it? He said, yeah, do what you want. Do what you want with it. So I said, so then after I liked the way it came out, I said, so it's one of your songs. He goes, no.
No, it's an old, yeah.
I said, well, who was it written by? He said, the Hollywood Hillbillies. And the bass player was... her name was Fur Dixon, and she played in the Cramps.
Oh my God!
I tracked her down a couple of years ago, just before the record, maybe as the record came out, and I sent her a Facebook, and I said, "I've done one of your songs. Can we meet up, and I'll give you a copy of it, and you want to come to a Morrissey show?" So it was very nice to sort of make a connection and continue the love, you know.
Yeah, man, that's so cool. I love that song. He did a great job on there, man. And you know, no disrespect, but it was much better than the original. You know, it was totally
good,
different.
Yeah, you're good, man. Never let it be said. I take back all that stuff I said about you.
let me say goodbye. Thank you for everything, man, and tell your wife I said thank you. Don't go anywhere. We'll wrap up in a second. And thanks for your time, Buzz. Okay. I hope to God you come over here, man. I'd love to come see you play with Marcy. That'd be wonderful. Any plans on doing that besides that one show? You ever come to Florida to play?
Sometimes.
This is the only question you got quiet on. Hang on a second. Let me wrap up. Everybody, thank you. Sometimes. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please share it on your social media channels. I want to thank Boz Bohr and his lovely wife, who's tolerated him for 40 years. I think she's ready for sainthood, like now, immediately. She's qualified. And most important, don't forget. Oh my God, I can't stop laughing. Most important, don't forget that happiness is a choice. So choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. Boz, thank you so much, brother.
Love it.
Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? Ew, seriously. They squeeze the grease out of the wool and process it with chemicals, and then you eat it. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I got rid of products I didn't want anywhere near my body. I found that many multivitamins contain high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and even lacked some of the nutrients we actually needed. So what did I do? At 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. Ritual's products are made traceable, meaning we share the science and sourcing for every single ingredient. For example, our vegan vitamin D3 comes from sustainably harvested lichen in Nottingham, England, not sheep. We trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. See for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.